I can see everyone looking in. I just want to tell all the employees here, there'll be no pie left at the end of the show. So just forget all about it. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow is Pi Day. That's P-I, the day that mathematicians and math geeks worldwide celebrate the symbol that represents the constant ratio of the circumference of a circle to its diameter. That's approximately 3.14159. So you got 3 being March, and then 0.14, the 14th, and then 159, 159 p.m. It's very clever. Pi has been calculated to 1 trillion digits, more than that, actually. Well, here at Food Friday, we're celebrating this day in the way we do best, by eating a trillion pies. We have two pie-making experts in the studio. Chef Paul Krebs has been a baking professor at Schenectady Community College for nearly 30 years. Having established the school's baking concentration, he's a certified culinary educator and active member of the American Culinary Federation, who crowned him Pastry Chef of the Year in 2010. Not wearing a crown. What math nerds are to pie, he is to baking, regularly attending baking conferences and workshops and building wood-fired ovens. Deanna Fox is a food and agriculture writer, regularly featured in the Times Union and all over Albany. She's also the author of the blog Silly Goose Farm and teaches culinary classes around Albany. One of our favorite guests here. Well, do you love pie? Do you like it sweet or savory? Well, you've got to tell us. Tell us about your perfect pie. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It is a Food Friday, after all. You can post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Radio using the hashtag VoxPop. You can also email us, if you wish, at voxpop@wamc.org. But once again, the number, 1-800-348-2551. Oh, you know, sometimes we talk food legal issues and food theory and food regulations and the kind of abstract issues about food on Food Friday. And then there are days like today where there are plates full of pie. This is pretty great. Deanna Fox, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Before we introduce Paul Krebs, I will say that you have tremendous fortitude. You tweeted to the program and to me earlier in the week, what's your pie? Mm-hmm. And I said, I made it up just very quickly. I said, all right, peanut butter, chocolate, bacon, bacon crust, and more bacon. And then in bold letters, you said challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted. I think that's what we have today.
It's pretty amazing. And just looking at it, it looks great. Paul Krebs, you have been at Schenectady Community College for almost 30 years. And you thought, hey, you'd stop in for a couple of years.
That would be interesting for a bit.
And it's turned into Schenectady County Community College. The culinary program is something that is well known far and wide.
It just continued to grow. When I started there, we had 2 baking classes. Now we have 6. We have a baking concentration, a little bakery, a restaurant.
Nice.
And it kept me interested and kept me having fun.
Well, what did you bring today to the table?
Brought 2 of the items that our students make at school.
Okay.
So we've got a chocolate cream pie that would do in one of our beginning baking classes. It's an all-butter crust. It's filled with a homemade chocolate pudding and rosettes of whipped cream. And I also brought a cranberry apple galette. It's a rustic freeform tart, or in this case, I made little tartlets that we sell in our bake shop.
Tartlets. Young tarts.
Yeah.
Well done.
Small ones.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, well, that's great, and it looks delicious. I tweeted a picture of that. Deanna, you were kind of a late show. I didn't get a chance to tweet the picture of what you brought. But you brought this. What are you going to name this pie?
Pie a la Ray.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, you're the genius behind this. I mean, Da Vinci, he thought about making a helicopter, but he couldn't make one.
Okay.
So the real genius is the one who made the
made
pie.
It. Yeah, well, I'm probably not the first to make a pie with bacon and chocolate and peanut butter, but I might be the best. We'll have to see.
All right, fair enough. And you also brought your favorite pie.
Yeah, blueberry. Oh, blueberry is my favorite pie of all time.
You know, I'm looking at the crust, and it's got this glaze on it. How do you do that?
Just an egg wash. So it was 1 egg with a tablespoon of water. Sometimes you can use cream. And you just mix that together and brush it on top, and it helps it... The protein in it will help it brown, help the crust brown. And I sprinkled a little fine sugar on top as well
beautiful.
To help it glisten.
Chef Krebs, Do you have trouble teaching the kids the fine points of crust? Because crust can be very good or it can be very bad.
It's all repetition. We have them do it at least twice, and for the students who struggle to get it, they might do it 3, 4, 5 times.
But, and that's all it takes?
But I don't have them leave the class until they succeeded.
So it's got to be light. It's got to be has a certain fluffiness, not fluffiness to it. But
flakiness to it.
Flakiness. That's the word I'm looking for. Well, so what are you eating so far, Deanna? Mm. Tell us. Don't talk with your mouth full.
All of them.
Okay. All right. Well, I haven't eaten yet. Let's go to the phone so I can try my special pie here. Tim in Gilderland. Tim, you're on.
Oh, great. Thanks. I have a question that's, I first of all, I love pie, and I appreciate it, but it's slightly a diversion from that, is that I was wondering if both Chef Krebs and Chef Fox could talk about this, is that to make baguettes and to make croissants, there is this mythology, or I don't know if mythology or folklore, is that it's difficult to get the right flour here in the States and the right water to make a baguette. A baguette is like, it seems like it would be a simple thing to do, but apparently it's a little more complicated.
Okay, this is a fair game question, and we've talked about the quality of flour and water when we've had bread people on, so maybe you two can tackle that while I eat some more of this pie.
Well, my passion is bread, so it's up my alley. It's a whole, could be a whole show in itself, but I find American flour works excellent. If you buy what they consider a winter wheat flour, easiest way to buy it for home baking would be the King Arthur all-purpose flour. It's the same thing that we buy commercially for the bake shop.
So you don't need an esoteric flour?
It is not.
Okay.
Easy to come by.
No, so a baguette can, which is to me an art form in itself, and I don't always see it around here that often. But it's encouraging to hear that from you that you can actually make it here.
The bigger challenge is the technique. The technique, the time, and the care that you put into it.
Okay, so what's the key that most people get wrong?
Time, patience.
Really?
The dough either needs to ferment very slowly or to be made with a starter that's fermented overnight.
Okay.
So that it's got a lot of flavor and aroma to it.
All right, Tim, not exactly pie-based, but a good question all the same. Thanks for getting us started.
Thank you.
Yep, bye now. 1-800-348-2551. Fox, ridiculous. It's so good. This pie of my insane idea that you have made is really good. Did you try it, Paul?
Trying it now.
He's eating it now, so we'll have to fill some time. Let's take another call. Let's go to Pat in Clarksville. Pat.
Hi, thank you for having me on today.
Sure.
My question is, my grandmother's recipe for pie crust called for 1/2 pound of lard. Now, lard is sometimes hard to find, so I've been substituting shortening for that. What's the difference between the lard and the shortening?
Excellent.
Well, so I use in my crust half butter and half shortening. So all the different fats have different kind of rates of evaporation as to their water content and their role in pie making. So butter, for instance, will create a more flaky and flavorful crust, but shortening will make it more tender. So that's why I use both. So if you feel like you're not getting this quite the same consistency with your pie crust, try substituting instead of all shortening, do half shortening and half half butter. But you could just save your bacon fat when you make bacon and use it in your pie, and you can buy lard commercially.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I did see that in the grocery store just recently. First time I saw it, you had to buy, like, I don't know, 5 pounds of it. But recently I saw it in 1 pound blocks, the same as you might buy shortening. So I wasn't sure if I should try the lard or stick with the shortening. And when I went online to see the equivalence between the two, half a pound versus, you know, how much shortening to use, I was trying to just figure out the difference that way, too.
Chef Krebs, where do you stand on the whole lard/shortening issue?
Well, if you go back to your grandmother's cookbooks, you see a lot of recipes calling for lard.
Yeah.
It had some real advantages. When you chill it, it has an almost waxy consistency. So when you cut it into your pastry dough, it holds a nice flake, makes a very flaky crust. Commercially, we rarely use it now, though, because it limits who you can sell your pies to. Vegetarians, anybody following kosher dietary laws or Islamic dietary laws, isn't going to want a pie made with pork fat.
Can you tell a taste difference, you personally? Can you say, oh, this was made with shortening, this was made with lard?
Between shortening and lard, very little. It's very neutrally flavored.
I see you nodding.
When it's well prepared.
I feel like I can tell the difference between different. And I know people who also use vegetable oil in their pie dough as well. And I feel like just besides the mouthfeel and the texture quality difference, there is a little bit of a taste difference as well.
And you mentioned bacon fat. And for most people nowadays, in the old days, this was done all the time. Mm-hmm. You cooked with that. A lot of times now people say, well, gosh, that can't be good for you.
Well, I don't think pie in general is good for you, but we eat it anyway.
All right. Fair enough. Well
played. The thing is, I feel very strongly that, you know, you shouldn't eat pie every day. There's a lot of things in the world you shouldn't eat every day. But using real, all-natural ingredients when you do make a pie is much better than eating, you know, commercially processed garbage every single day. So
I never had anything cooked with bacon fat until I met my wife. And my cholesterol went up really fast, but it's really good. I mean, there's something really good about cooking with that.
Well, the crust in our peanut butter bacon pie is made with bacon fat.
Really?
Yes.
Well, so you went hog wild with the bacon on the. I mean, the bacon. By the way, the bacon is perfect. It's crispy.
Thank you.
It's really good. And we're going to try some of Chef Krebs' creations after we take a short break. It's Pie Day here on Vox Pop Food Friday. That's what I meant to say. 1-800-348-2551. Back with your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Sundog Cider at Solaqua Power and Art, Chatham, New York. Making power from sunlight, solar electric and solar hot water sales and leasing, spray foam and cellulose insulation. Spin your meter backwards, sundogsolar.net. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their new website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future, preservenys.org. Cafe Capriccio, offering dining and catering with Tuscan cuisine in Albany, New York, and Neapolitan cuisine in Saratoga Springs, cafecapriccio.com for reservations. And Hudson Valley Federal Credit Union, a local financial cooperative offering business checking, commercial loans, online banking, and more, hvfcu.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Food Friday, 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We talk pies today. On this day before Pie Day, Deanna Fox is here and Chef Paul Krebs. And here's one that came in via email. This is from Maureen, who says, I need to go to work at 2:30, so I hope you'll get to this before then. All right, Maureen, here we go. How do I keep my crust pre-baked for meringue pies from getting soggy? That's from Maureen.
So you're blind baking your pie crust, and then you're filling it with your lemon and topping it with meringue. How do you keep that? Sometimes if you add a little bit of sugar, white sugar, and this goes for blind baking and also if you do like a fruit-filled pie, I feel, adding a tablespoon of just white sugar into the bottom acts almost as like a barrier. But you might be able to rub some butter or a fat barrier in the bottom, I would think, too, that would keep your pre-baked crust and your filling separate. What do you think, Chef?
And also just making sure when you do pre-bake it that you get it nice and crisp in the first place, that it's cooked thoroughly.
Yeah.
It's got a little color to it. And then when you put your filling in, get it to chill down quickly so it sets up.
I mean, Maureen doesn't say how long she'll be keeping it before she makes it. So I assume that after a certain number of hours, it's just not going to happen, right?
If it's sitting out, if she has it in the fridge, I think just by the process of what happens in your refrigerator, it might get a little bit soggy and kind of stale. Both soggy and stale, surprisingly. But I think at room temperature, how long would you recommend, Chef, that you would bake it before you fill it? Probably not more than a day.
I'm trying to do it that day.
Yeah.
Well, I got to say, the tartlet, amazing. And the flakiness of this crust. So what's your secret here?
For the tartlet, it's all butter, and it's a fairly high proportion of butter.
But you can't
cut
lose.
Into fairly large flakes.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Really good. All right, let's go to Ben in Granby, Mass. Ben, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm curious, any thoughts about how to make the flakiest crust? I've heard say using vodka helps.
Vodka?
Vodka. I haven't tried it, but I'm curious about comments of how to make the flakiest crust.
Well, I think butter, as far as your fats go, butter is probably your best bet for a flaky crust. Vodka's, I think the use for vodka is twofold. And that would be the first one helps or limits the production of gluten in the flour. There's kind of two proteins that come together and form like a weave and a weft that will create gluten in your pie crust. So vodka or vinegar will reduce the likelihood of that that gluten developing, but also the rate of evaporation versus water. It evaporates off differently, kind of like in a big pop instead of a slow evaporation, and that will help create air and lift.
And you don't taste the vodka after you make it? I've never heard of this before.
No, it's pretty small proportion of vodka that you would use.
And I've never tried working with it, but the explanation is exactly what I've heard there, is that it limits the gluten development and evaporates off, so it gives you a very crisp crust.
There you go.
Thank you.
Ben, give it a shot.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Over to Mark in Salem. Mark, you're up.
Oh, hello. I heard someone mention at the very beginning of the program that had experience with wood-fired bake ovens.
You make them, right?
One. I've made one, repaired one.
Okay.
Yeah, I have. I restored it 18th century houses. I've built about six, and I really never spent much time actually using them. Most of mine are built with a fireplace next to it, and some are too high and some are too low. But I got it right. And that old witch's tale about putting your arm in there to see if it's a high enough temperature and the hair burns off. You ever hear that one?
That old witch's tale, eh? I haven't heard that one.
What you do is you wait for the brick to turn red again after the black burns off. It's above 451 degrees, Fahrenheit 451. So as soon as it turns red again after when you're firing it, it's at 450 basically. And so I've done a lot of pizza. Oh, good Lord! You fire it up, I can do 16 pieces. With the fire out of it. But pies, only thing I've been able to do so far was a chicken pot pie, and I've had sort of failures with other things. Any thoughts on because of the extreme heat in the beginning, and then of course it dies down.
All right, fair question, Paul.
You can buy yourself a little infrared thermometer. It's a little trigger-held plastic device.
Yeah, I can tell the temperature of the inside. I've been trained in physics. So 451 is what I start at or above.
Right.
And so but what about the crust? Is there or the cooking implement? I use the Dutch oven for certain things that, or should I put it on a stone or something, or kind of the pan? I mean. What would you think in that direction, how would I modify the crust in order to make it? It cooks differently than it does in a regular oven, of course.
Every wood-fired oven I've worked in has different characteristics, so it's really getting to learn your own oven. So it depends what specifically is not working, if one part's browning too much or if you need to insulate one area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Can you keep a fire going in it in the back while you're using the front? I've tried that. Have you ever done something?
I do that for pizza, but generally if I'm doing anything like a pie or doing breads, it's generally after the coals have been raked down.
Ah. Okay.
And for the pie, you might want to go in a falling oven where when I was doing bread, I would heat the bread up to the oven up to 500. I was baking my breads. And then if I was doing something like a pie, I would go in afterwards while the oven temperature is falling a bit.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and as the temperature drops, the berry filling or something, because usually it's just some sort of traditional type pie filling. That's sort of or apples or something. I don't know what, but that can cook for quite a while at a lower temperature. Other than the temperature, I can't seem to control to get it. the same result.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I got a feeling that there's more physics here than we have time for on the program.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. So are there certain things that you just cannot cook in a wood-fired oven and have them come out well?
I'm not sure that cannot, but it's definitely a serious learning curve, learning to work with a wood-fired oven.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Deanna Fox is here, Paul Krebs, and we talk pies and all what pies we have. Bill in Great Barrington. Bill.
Hi there. Nice idea for a show today.
Yeah, well, it wasn't mine, but I sure am behind it.
Two shout-outs. I live next to the best pie baker in South County, here, Rah-Rah Sally. And I myself am considered somewhat Lord God King of the key lime pie.
Oh, good for you.
However, what I notice is whenever I try and substitute different citrus fruits, whether it's the Meyer lemons that I recently tried, or oranges, or regular straight-up lemon, or even grapefruit, that the texture of the filling changes, and the flavor does not develop as strongly. And I'm wondering whether there's a difference chemically there that affects how that sweetened condensed milk and egg yolk set up in reaction to the different acidity levels of those citrus fruits.
Well, I think that's probably it, the acid level. If you have something that's too acidic, you could be almost curdling your egg. I don't know. What would you think, Chef?
It could be either a little more, a little less acid. Although I had good luck. We used a passion fruit concentrate that seemed to have about the right acidity level, and it worked very well as a substitute.
Hmm.
So,
You mean as a straight-up passion fruit pie?
It was in a key lime recipe, and we substituted in a little bit of passion fruit.
Okay. Yeah, the limes themselves work very well, and what I've wondered is whether I need to be, like, say, adjusting that acidity level for those other fruits by maybe adding some citric acid or some other natural acidifier, or doing something to cut them a little bit, and whether you knew any tricks or ideas about that.
Well, key limes, to my understanding, aren't quite as acidic as just generic limes, is that correct? I think that they're a little less acidic. So you could, are you putting like sweetened condensed milk in your filling?
Yeah, basically you beat the egg yolks for forever and with a whisk, and then you slowly whip the sweetened condensed milk into that, or fold the sweetened condensed milk into that mixture. To that, you add the citrus juice, and that keeps the egg yolks from curdling.
Mm-hmm.
What I just noticed, the setup texture is a little runnier with some fruits than others, and the limes themselves seem to set up quite nicely.
Well, why don't you try just adding, use bottled. This is one time I would advocate.
No.
You want to go and get bottled lemon juice, because bottled lemon juice has a higher citric acid ratio.
Really?
Yes. So any of you home canners out there, probably anybody who makes cans up their own tomatoes probably knows this, but you want to buy, pre-made bottled lemon juice. And try.
What about that off flavor that comes from the heating and the pasteurization to bottle the lemon juice and the lime juice?
I think use your lime juice as you always do, but try adding just a tablespoon of. Yeah, and see if that'll bump it up enough, because that might help it to set.
We'll try that. Thank you very much.
Hey,
good
great
luck.
Call. Thanks very much. The king of the key lime pie. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Chef Paul Krebs and Deanna Fox are here. I tried your blueberry pie, by the way. It's great because it's not overly sweet.
I know. It's more fruit forward.
It's really good.
Yeah, thank you.
Nice job. And the crust, of course, it's pure Fox. So here's one. Now we've done the key lime from the king of the key lime pie. Here's an email from Mark. Good afternoon. My favorite kind of pie is banana cream pie, but it's hard to find. I only ever come across it from time to time at a supermarket, bakery, or at an occasional diner. Whenever I buy a banana cream pie, it never seems to keep very long. What's the trick to making a good banana cream pie, and why is it so hard to find? And is there any way to preserve it so that it doesn't go bad right away? That's from Mark.
When we make it at school, it's basically a homemade vanilla pudding layered with slices of fresh raw banana. And just by that nature, it's not going to keep well. It's something you want to make for a party, make for a dinner, and serve it that day. is going to be its best. Second day, it'll be okay. By the third day, the bananas are going to look a little discolored.
Okay, but it's still edible if you close your eyes, right?
Exactly. Dim the lights.
All right, fair enough. Over to Jim in North Pownell, Vermont. Jim, you're on.
Hey, I'm just wondering if you guys have ever done anything with schmaltz.
Jim, I keep two jars at the top of my refrigerator, one for bacon fat and one for schmaltz.
What schmaltz?
It's goose grease.
Yeah. Goose grease.
Or chicken fat.
Chicken fat, yep. yes, I do. I use it when I make crust for chicken pot pie.
And if I substitute a cup of schmaltz for a cup of Crisco, mm-hmm. am I doing the things right?
I don't think that it works as well. I think you have to do like half and half. So I usually do. So my pie crust recipe calls for, I would use like 5 tablespoons of schmaltz and 5 tablespoons or like a third of a cup of shortening or butter.
Okay, so roughly a 50-50 mixture of schmaltz and shortening, and that would do what I want to do.
Right, and I think it's just great if you're making a chicken already, excuse me, if you have a chicken already that you've roasted and you have the leftovers, the schmaltz that comes off the roast, just pour it off the pan and save it, and then when you have the leftover chicken, use that in your chicken pot pie, and that way you're not creating any food waste either. So I think it's just a great utilitarian way to use up what you have.
Yeah, when
you're chilling it, if you put it in the refrigerator and chill it, naturally the fat will go to the top, the liquid will go to the bottom, and you can lift the fat off.
Lift the fat off and use that 50-50 with vegetable shortening and go from there.
All right.
Okay, thank you so much.
Hey, Jim, thanks a lot. The number to call here on Food Friday is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We're talking an awful lot about fat of different varieties on this program. So schmaltz being chicken, or as he said, goose, mm-hmm. And then bacon fat. What is the qualitative difference as far as the actual cooking, the chemistry of it? We know that there's a little difference in taste, but is there a different application, for instance, from one to the other?
Well, there's different melting points. There's different moisture contents of the different fats. That give and different flavors, obviously. Mm-hmm.
So I use, as I think I mentioned earlier, I use butter and shortening. And I feel like the shortening creates that really tender crust that doesn't get stuck in your teeth. It's just really nice and tender. But the butter creates the flakes, and it also creates just this great flavor. So I like using both in there because I feel like it's kind of the best of both worlds.
So you basically have shortening, you have butter, you have schmaltz, you have bacon fat.
Yes.
Where's the room for anything else, or is that all the food groups?
That's pretty much it.
All right, back to the phones. Let's go to Martha in Shady. Martha, you're on.
Yes. I sometimes use applesauce instead of fat in baking everything I bake, and I just wondered why that works. I'm curious about the chemistry of it.
Well, it works well in a lot of cakes and quick breads because it gives you the perception of moistness that you would get from having the fat in the recipe. But I'm afraid pie dough is one place where it's not going to work.
Uh-huh.
In pie dough, we're actually using the physical flakes of fat to give us our texture.
Uh-huh. I have used it in pie crust, but maybe I don't remember whether they were successful. Maybe. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Martha. We appreciate the call. Number to call here on Food Friday is 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Chef Paul Krebs of Schenectady County Community College, and Deanna Fox, who is a blogger and writer in our region. And you just got done doing a piece on blueberry pies and buckles and
right.
such?
So next weekend, next Thursday in the Times Union, the food section will feature kind of a breakdown of what the difference is between all the different stewed fruit and batter-topped desserts. So cobblers and crisps and slumps and grunts and buckles
and
fetties.
Grunts? What's a grunt?
A grunt is very similar to how most people think of a cobbler. So basically you're cooking fruit on the stovetop, and then you're making almost like a dumpling, and you're putting it on top, and then you're putting it in the oven and letting it all cook together.
So these are all, do you think that if you go to a different section of the country, 1,000 miles away, you will find 18 different names for the same things?
Yes, very much so.
And are there things, like blueberry buckle is something that I didn't know about until really I went to Maine, mm-hmm. or people that I know went to Maine. So are there things that just you can't get anywhere else? Say you go to North Carolina, there is something special done with blueberries that you just can't find around here.
Well, one thing that I know that's hyper-regional, and Kim Severson with the New York Times wrote about this, is a sonder.
I'm sorry?
An S-O-N-D-E-R.
What's that?
It's kind of like this really soupy fruit mixture with some, almost like a crumbly dough on top. And that seems to be like the big thing for community dinners and church dinners in Appalachia.
Well, so, darned.
Yeah.
Do you do any geographical focus studies at Schenectady County Community College?
In the fall, our little restaurant, the Casola Dining Room, does regional American.
Okay.
So we change, we do a different region of the United States each week. And
that's got to be a lot of change from week to week.
That's a lot of change. Staffing rotates, menu rotates. It keeps everybody on their toes.
All right. Give me an example of, say, Oklahoma.
We do not have one.
You don't have Oklahoma.
It tends to be more broad region.
Well, give me something from that region.
So when we get to the Southwest, which is Texas, and I guess you could go up as far as Oklahoma, we've got a tequila lime cheesecake in there.
Yikes. Yeah, that sounds all right. You didn't bring any of that, did you?
Did not bring that tonight.
All right. Well, we're going to have to take a break while I yell at Paul. It's 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Food Friday. Lines are open if you want to call in and share your pie stories. Perhaps you're the king or a duke of pie. We'd love to hear about it.
Support for WAMC comes from Schenectady Green Market, a community marketplace providing fresh local produce and artisan goods downtown every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. inside Proctor's, schenectadygreenmarket.org. The John Keel Music Group, with shops in Albany, Clifton Park, Hermes in Schenectady, and D&D Music in Pleasant Valley, locally owned and operated since 1930, johnkeelmusic.com. Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, providing dental implants to replace missing teeth. PadulaDDS.com, and University of New Hampshire, offering an online Master of Social Work program, online.unh.edu.
Vox Pop on WAMC. It's a Food Friday. We're joined by Chef Paul Krebs of Schenectady County Community College and Deanna Fox, no stranger to these airwaves and to the Times Union and all over Albany. And boy, we've been eating some pie. I got to say, Chef Krebs, there's a little scandal of brewing because you made a chocolate pie and it's quite delicious. Turns out you had your students make it, and I would like to get to the bottom of this as a newsman. What happened?
Some of them, if they're listening, probably said, now we know why we were working so extra hard last night, doing extra things. I did bake it off this morning. I did put it together, but they did have everything prepped for me. They made it super easy. They had a little kit for me. And this is a recipe that they typically do in class.
So as I said at the break, we've all done this, maybe not real cooks, but all of us Joe Schmoes from around the world have taken instant pudding, chocolate pudding, and put it in a pre-made pie crust. This is obviously a little more complex than that.
It is, but if you have your little prep team setting it up for you the night before, it's not much more difficult.
Well, did you give them extra credit at least?
They did very well last night.
All right, fine.
They had the all-butter dough made. I just had to roll it out, put it in the tin.
Okay.
All the ingredients were there.
All right, that's the story. You're sticking to it. This question here via email from R. Does it make a difference what kind of apples are used in an apple pie? And if so, what kind of apples do you recommend for making the best tasting apple pie? Deanna Fox has often talked about this.
Yes, it does make a difference. Different apples have different types or different amounts of pectin in them. And a low pectin apple just won't hold up as well in the oven. So I think generally a green apple, so like a Granny Smith, works great. An Empire apple is good. Macintosh is good. But I think the best are actually Golden Delicious.
Why?
The flavor, they're not overly sweet. They're not overly tart. They're kind of right in the middle. And the pectin quality is really great. And one tip, regardless of what apple that you're using, to help them bake and to help your pie from getting really runny? Because I feel like a lot of people get discouraged by apple pie because the filling ends up a little bit runny, because just because the apple concentrates so much. So sometimes when you cut into an apple pie, you'll have this pocket of air between the filling and the top crust, and that's because your apples have cooked down so far. But one tip is, with a little bit of butter, like maybe 2 tablespoons, actually cook your apples on the stove first. So just put them in a saucepan.
Gets rid of some of the water?
Yeah, it helps kind of activate the pectin. And the pectin is, so when you make jams and jellies and that kind of thing and you have to add pectin, that's what makes it set up and get that nice gel to it. So if, you know, you're not quite sure about your apple, try that first.
And what about cheddar cheese on the top? Has to be, right?
Has to be, yes.
Is this standard operating procedure, Chef?
The cheddar cheese,
yes.
And also the pre-cooking of the apples when we do a big pie bake-off for Thanksgiving at the school and we sell pies. We do ours with a pre-cooked apple filling.
Okay.
So it's cooked stovetop. So,
perfect sense. All right, let's go back to the phones. And Margie in Olive Bridge. Hi, Margie, you're on.
Hi, everybody. Happy pre-pie day, or pie eve, as they say.
Fair enough.
Hey, so I love making pie. I like to make sweet potato pie, and I make that with a crust that's an oatmeal pecan crust that's sweetened with dates. And I use coconut oil. And I would like, but I haven't made like a regular pie dough since I stopped using butter and all of that. So I wonder if you could talk about using coconut oil instead of other fats. Is that something?
To be honest, I haven't tried it in a pie dough, but I suspect it could work very well. Just by coincidence, I was scraping some out of a container earlier today, and when chilled, it has a consistency that looks like it would be very appropriate. It's very solid, very firm.
So but what about when it's heated up?
Even when it's room temperature, it's really solid. And when you heat it up to about body temperature heat, it starts to liquefy.
Okay.
But so do you think I could if I could just take a regular pie recipe and just replace the fat that's called for with coconut oil?
It's a small investment. I would certainly give it a try.
There you go. I like that answer.
I think my only tip on that would be when you're adding your liquid, your water, into your pie crust, add it in very gradually. Because you don't want your dough to be too wet, or else it's just not going to flake up on you.
Okay. Yeah.
Right, Margie, thank you.
Well, thank you. Have a great day, folks.
Good luck with your experimentation. Okay, so those who are just tuning in, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that Deanna threw the challenge out on Twitter, said, what pie do you want? And I said, I want peanut butter, I want dark chocolate, I want bacon with a bacon crust and more bacon on top. And she tweeted, challenge accepted. So tell us about this crust, because the crust is amazing.
Well, thank you. So it's a shortbread cookie crust. So I took, similar to a graham cracker crust that you would do on various pies, I just took some shortbread cookies to equal about 2 cups of crumbs, and I just crushed them up. And I took 7 or 8 slices of thick-cut slab bacon, and I cooked them off in the oven. So I lined a sheet tray with foil, and I put a baking rack on top of that and put the bacon out. And I just put it in the oven at 400 and let it get really crispy. So all the fat rendered off. And then when the bacon cooled, I crumbled that up. And I just poured the fat into the crumb.
That explains it.
And then I pushed it into a pie plate and baked it at 400 for like 15 minutes just till it was brown.
This explains why we need a defibrillator on the show at all times. All right, back to the phones we go. Cindy and Troy. Cindy, you're on.
Hi. I love pie, too. It's my favorite dessert, especially blueberry. And I have a question about shortening. I have a recipe from my mom from the 50s. I had great luck with it over the years. But, of course, and I won't name it, it used a particular name brand shortening well known to all, which I don't use anymore because of the trans fat.
Okay.
I've experimented with natural shortenings that do not contain trans fats. I've experimented with lard. If there are no dietary restrictions, what do you folks recommend?
As far
as in other words, the dietary restrictions related to lard. What do you prefer to use?
Like a brand of lard, or
Well, you know, I don't want to use the name brand that has trans fats. Okay. So if we're not using that, there are natural ones that do not have trans fats. There's lard. And then, of course, you use half butter.
Mm-hmm.
What shortening do you use for the other half?
Probably the same one that you're avoiding.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. All right. You know, honestly, my opinion on shortening is this. Shortening is hydrogenated vegetable oil, and it's
right.
far less processed and filled with chemicals than margarine is.
Right.
And a lot of other, you know, supposedly diet products or healthy, low fat, those things are in a lot of ways worse for you than just using the shortening. And pie isn't something that I would recommend you eat every day. So if you're going to make a
exactly.
pie, yes, just,
yep.
you know, do the shortening, do the butter. You're gonna live, I promise.
Oh, I do the butter. That's not the issue. But you're right. It's just a treat, so enjoy it when you have it.
Life is short. Eat the pie.
Oh, that's great. There's a shirt right there. Cindy, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Bye now. So shortening, I thought trans fat was now illegal in New York State. Shortening still has it in?
I'm not sure. I think
they're coming out with some new formulations that are trans fat free.
Okay.
Although who knows what in 7 or 10 years they'll be telling us the new fat is in these new shortenings.
And it's
new
worse
blends.
For you, and we didn't realize it, and now everyone's grown an extra head or something. All right, let's go to Sharon in Belchertown. Sharon, you're on.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yo, yeah.
Okay. I wanted to comment on the evolution of the shortenings. My mother made pies that were wonderful, and at church suppers, the men would look to see which one she got. Brought in the door because they wanted that one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she used lard. Furthermore, she didn't measure anything. She poured a little flour out on the counter, put a little lard in it, and worked on it. And she knew when it was right. Nobody else did, you know, but she could do that. Now, I make butter, which would make pie with cream cheese and butter for the crust.
Cream
but
cheese?
Cream cheese and butter. It's a recipe I found in the 70s and have hung on to. It starts out in the mixer. You don't get your hands on it and don't get it warm. And it works very well. It's very easy to do.
Hmm.
It works very well. It's half cream cheese and half butter, and it's just great.
Have you ever done this pie, lady?
No, but I bet it rolls out like a dream. I bet it's nice and, you know.
It does. And
yeah.
it's really easy to do.
How about you, Chef? Have you tried that?
I haven't tried it in a pie dough, but I've used it in arugula dough, which is very
right.
similar.
Right.
And it behaves nicely.
But the third step there is my daughter lives in Brooklyn, and is vegan, and she makes a vegan pie crust with vodka, and it's great. I agree. It's
mm-hmm.
great. And the other thing is my mother said, always, as one of you said, the Golden Delicious is the best apple for a pie.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's what she thinks. Now, here's my question.
Okay.
What do you have to say with fruit pies about starting the oven hotter and
yes.
then reducing the temperature versus keeping it at one temperature throughout? You know, it's a fine line there. You don't want to burn it, but you want it really cooked.
Every time. So the reason why you're doing that is similar to, like, how you would sear a steak and then put it in the oven to finish. You're searing
mm-hmm.
your pie, and it's going to create a crunchier, flakier crust. So I start mine at 400. I put a little bit of foil around the edge just to keep the edge of the pie from burning. And I start it at 400, and I put it in there for probably 25 minutes, and then turn the oven down to 375 and let it go for like another 30 minutes. And when I turn the oven down, I take the foil off. And turns out like a dream every time.
And it really does, Sharon. I got to say, the blueberry pie here is perfect.
Oh, really? Well, a lot of recommendations would tell us to put the foil on near the end if it's looking too brown. I've not heard of that at the beginning, and I might want to try that.
Yeah. You know, and you just have to, at that point, too, you can kind of see where it's browning on the top. So if you need to rotate it, you can kind of rotate your pie so it gets nice
yeah.
and brown. Because I have a really wonky, difficult oven. So
yeah.
I'm always having to shift
electric, gas, what do you use? Wood?
Electric.
Electric.
And
my oven is fortunately very consistent all around, but that outer edge is easy to get too dry and too brown.
What were you going to say, Paul?
Starting with a higher temperature will also help maintain the fluted design that you've created better.
Yes.
It's less likely to slump. It's going to stand up better. If you can get it into the oven while it's really cold, hit it with a high temperature, you'll hold the shape.
Amazing.
Really?
Right.
See, you learned something.
Good.
Thanks,
Thank
Sharon.
You.
Appreciate
Thanks.
The call. You, Deanna, learned this from your grandmother?
Yes, I had a couple of bakers in my life that were really great. So I had a great-grandmother who was fantastic. But my next-door neighbor, who was like a surrogate grandmother, her name was Barbara Stiles, and she was just the most fantastic woman I think I've ever known. And she taught me all of her pie skills for the most part. It was never implicitly taught.
What shocks me is that Chef Krebs, who's been there 30 years, he nods his head when you say these things. So you must have had really good teachers back in the day.
Yeah, but I think that just doing it yourself is probably the best experience because you can watch somebody make a pie 50 times, and it's not until you get your hands on it that you really know what you're doing.
It's the trial and error and the repetition that really lets you fine-tune your skills. So
how many
you can
pies
see
did you have to make, Chef, before you got it right?
I'm always trying for the next better one. Yeah.
All right, that's a cop-out, man.
All right,
let's. Here's one from email. Emily wants to know, I was baking an apple crisp for someone who couldn't eat butter, and I found a coconut oil-based shortening in the refrigerated section of my natural foods grocery store for vegan baking. It worked really well. I don't remember the brand name, but I bet it's fairly common in natural food stores. Happy Pie Day. So thank you, Emily. Not a question there, but we appreciate the input. Over to Layla in Mount Tremper. Hiya, Layla. You're up.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I also wanted to weigh in on the coconut oil. I don't bake pies. I never grew up eating pies so much, so I have a lot of respect for people who do. I do use coconut oil in cookies because I'm sensitive to dairy. I've tried goat dairy, goat butter. I have a sensitivity to that as well, so I switched to coconut oil, and I can make great chocolate chip cookies. I actually like to use maple sugar as well because it just adds such a nice flavor, but it gives the crystalline effect that sugar does when you're baking, and, coconut oil creams with it and all of it. It's just great. I have tried some alternative margarine kind of health food spreads. I can't do soy either, so I find them without soy, and I find they're just greasy. I don't like them. I mean, maybe mm-hmm. some people do well with them. So I love the coconut oil, and I think it's got good nutrition in it, too. It's not super processed the way some of these refined things can be.
Yeah,
comments,
great.
Anybody?
I think I need to go try a coconut oil crust pie immediately.
All right.
I never tried one, so I'm going to try it.
Great. I'd love to hear it. I'd love you to come back on the show and let us know how it works. Because, for me, if it comes out, if it's not burned and it's not raw and it tastes good and people like it, I'm happy with it. I'm not very fussy about
it. Now, that's a good Zen-like way to look at it. Good job. Layla, thank you.
People like you who are really artists with it, I'd love to see how it comes out if you use coconut oil myself.
You know what? Maybe Paul will have his students do this next time. And we can find out. He won't have to do it himself. We'll just have the kids do it. Thanks, Layla. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. So this has been an embarrassment of riches today. I mean, the tartlets, phenomenal. The chocolate pie, phenomenal. The blueberry pie, the special peanut butter chocolate pie. It's been quite a day. It's really... I can't thank you both enough. 1-800-348-2551. Only about a minute to go. Now, Deanna, you mentioned that your article is on Thursday in the TU?
Yes.
Okay. So that's coming out online and in print.
In print.
And your blog is, of course, Silly Goose Farm.
Yes. It's a little defunct at the moment.
Why?
But it's still there.
What happened?
Just blogger burnout.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. So you've been teaching a lot of classes and whatnot. And the last time you were here, by the way, one of the most with Rick Orlando. Just I'm glad you didn't have to see it, Chef Krebs, because Rick had her blindfolded and was feeding her. And it was uncomfortable. It was basically uncomfortable for all.
Everybody.
And, thankfully, you didn't try any of those stunts.
But I could see Rick doing that.
So, Rick, I'm sure Rick will try something to top that next time. And, I don't know. But we have time for one more call here. So let's jump in.
I'm just excited. We have some pie left over. I think this would make an awesome breakfast with coffee tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that we'll be able to, I don't think there'll be anything left by the end of the show.
We'll
There's
see.
A minute left.
And Deanna, I'm sure you're going to be getting requests for the recipe for your creation.
Oh, we have to do
the
that.
The pie a la Ray?
Yeah.
When you asked me about it?
Let's deal with Sue and Lennox first. Sue, you only got about 15 seconds. I apologize. Go ahead.
That's quite all right. Just weighing in, I use coconut oil. It's fabulous. If I just use all butter, it's not flaky enough. And for the really daring, you can get leaf lard at Berkshire Organics, which makes a terrific crust. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the taste of, I'm going to say the word, Crisco.
Okay,
bye
you said
guys.
It. You said it. Bye. Thanks, Sue. Okay, so our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, not here today. Maybe we can get this recipe up at some point, maybe early next week.
Yes.
Or you can throw it on your blog if you feel like blogging.
I could.
All right.
Well, Sillygoosefarm.blogspot.com.
Fair enough. Deanna Fox and Paul Krebs, thanks so much for being here, both of you. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy. Zach, almost pie time, young man. See, yeah, you can come right in here as soon as you get into the news. Support comes from the Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tasting Saturday afternoons. SpiritHAUS.com. Women's Care and Obstetrics and Gynecology, providing full-service midwifery care in collaboration with a team of all-female obstetricians. Offices in Saratoga Springs and Glens Falls, New York. WomensCareNY.com. And Hudson Opera House, Hudson, New York, presenting a live stream of the TEDx conference in Vancouver, Truth and Dare, Tuesday, 11:30 a.m. at Club Helsinki, HudsonOperaHouse.org, for more information. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to Zach at the controls. Mary Vetter answered the phones. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. Thanks again for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Alan will be here for Medical Monday.